Miranda, for the people who do not know who you are, could you introduce yourself?
Miranda Stanfield, founder of MBS.tech. I have been working for the federal government in the tech space for the last 10 years, more recently cybersecurity in the realm of GRC. I have my master's in cybersecurity, earning my PhD in cybersecurity leadership. I have programs. I had a program in DC teaching folks how to get in tech. That was a big one. And I got program of the year for that. That was my very first year.
Now, I know you started making I want to say either it's while you're getting your master's or right after it, but that's when you start making that big push for getting into policy-based.
FedRAMP. Have you heard of FedRAMP? So for cloud systems, the company will go through a vetting process that deems them secure to implement enterprise-wide, like throughout all agencies. So if I wanted to use Azure, most likely it's FedRAMP. I could just look it up. You could easily, it's much easier to implement it because it's already gone through this rigorous vetting process by the federal government.
Big M, what the M stand for? Money.
Miranda.
We trying to see, we pretty sure that from whatever you was making with the bees when it's them with up, yesterday price ain't today's price.
Oh, yeah. That is long gone.
We trying to see. I got to have a different title than her. We trying to
seriously, like I most recently, I like 10,000 in 5 hours.
This video is being sponsored by Level Careers. It's 2024 and people are still having issues with getting in cybersecurity. If you're new to the channel, my name is Henry Davis and I am a cybersecurity career coach. The main issue that I see people struggling with is not their resume, but lack of cybersecurity skills. Input, Level Careers cybersecurity course taught by Josh Matacore. Now, this has been a course that I've recommended for plenty of people on my consultations and clients. And let me tell you, the results have been astounding. Some of the main reasons why you want to get into cybersecurity is because it's in high demand, job security, you can work remotely, and you're constantly learning new things. In 2021, the Bureau of Labor Statistics stated that the average salary for an information security analyst is $113,000. Again, in cybersecurity, the link will be in the description. And use my code, TEXTUAL10, to get 10% off your purchase.
Welcome back to the Textual Talk Podcast. I'm your host, HD. And guys, we got a lovely guest for y'all. She's one of the first people to support the show 3 years ago. And now we have to just have to update everything in person. But we have none other than the biggest.
Stop.
We got Miranda.
Miranda.
A.K.A. Miranda.
Duh.
Stansfield in the building, everybody. So I want y'all to welcome her back to the show. If you're listening on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or any other streaming service, please follow us, leave us a comment, help us out in the podcast analytics. And if you're watching us on YouTube, hit the like button, bell icon, hit all so you'll be notified when we're dropping our content. All right.
It's been a while.
It's been a while, and we finally got you here.
Right.
You know me, I'm persistent. I'm like, listen, we got to get you on there.
Yeah, and I felt like it would be much better to do it in person again versus over Zoom. So it's so funny that we've known each other for so long but never met in person.
Yeah. It was funny. That 3 years seemed much longer. Like
100%.
So many things have changed. Like at that time, I only had one child. Now I have three.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like working one job and I moved a couple of times since then. So it just seemed like so much stuff is like taking off a lot. It's been a lot, man. I think back then you still were like on Twitter.
I was definitely on Twitter.
Man, I don't know, man. Like, I definitely wish I could go find like some of that old stuff. Like, oh, y'all, listen. I should call y'all curtains. All y'all doing was shading each other.
Oh, not me.
Everybody was shading each other.
Wait, are you talking about the big incident thing? That whole thing?
Just in general. I think everybody was a little shady.
I was definitely shady because that person came to me. Can you do my resume? Can you help me get in tech? And then it's, how do you have this, that, and the third? Hey.
Funny. No, what's that little thing? Not funny, huh?
Funny.
Funny, weird. That's what that is.
It's a learning lesson. I think two things happened from that. One, the industry viewed how Black in tech, how people came in Black in tech, their training, much differently. Like there was just like this, it was so bad. It really hurt us versus helped us. No matter who got a job, how much people were making, in the end, we looked bad. Articles were coming down. People would post like rebuttals or apologies. And it's just, you ruined it, almost ruined it for everyone. But also though, it helped, it shifted people to more legit ways to get into tech. Now, I know people still finessing, but people understand now you have to vet people. So
we'll definitely talk more about that because the people who were already veterans in the space were saying, hey, maybe you should go look into this. Y'all gatekeeping. Y'all don't want us in. Y'all don't want us to make money. Okay. Have it your way. Mm-hmm. Go ahead, BK. But Miranda, for the people who do not know who you are, mm-hmm. which I'm surprised how y'all don't know who Miranda is. Could you introduce yourself?
Okay. I'm trying to think where I should start. Okay. So I, Miranda Stanfield, founder of MBS.tech. I have been working for the federal government in the tech space for the last 10 years. More recently, cybersecurity in the realm of GRC. I've had some technical roles, but I love GRC. I've done a lot. I have my master's in cybersecurity, earning my PhD in cybersecurity leadership, published research article, author. I have programs. I had a program in DC teaching folks how to get in tech. That was a big one. And I got program of the year for that. That was my very first year. Detroit, Baltimore. So I am just a true advocate for changing the color of tech, specifically cybersecurity. So that's me.
Okay.
The Black Widow.
Wish I had my soundboard, give you some round of applause. I may add it there in the background. But no, that's what I'm saying. Like, back then you had all those things in the works, but now just look at it transpire. So to actually get those people to see a little bit more of you, I can't remember all the stuff we covered last time.
Yes, sir.
But just to do a brief kind of recap of your early life, how your dad inspired you to mm-hmm. get into tech,
yeah.
and then we can start getting into that professional sure. career, and how's that been for you?
Yeah. We grew up, my sisters and I, our family, we didn't start off with being a well-off middle-class family, but my parents were very ambitious, very intelligent people who grew up in one of the worst parts of D.C., but wanted better for their kids. And that was private education. We were in sports. We had to play instruments. We had to do all these. My dad just wanted to be well-rounded people. When it comes back to education, which our family values, he was in tech. He worked for IBM, one of the first Black people to work for IBM. And from there, after he left, he wanted us to go to private school. And so he volunteered to set up the school-wide network. And I helped him. So that was about 8. And I'm just helping image computers. And I'm like, now remember, this is like the big floppy disk. Like,
I remember.
Imaging. So that was just like regular for me. But I didn't even know what I just knew I was helping my dad. And so him doing that work paid for our education to go to the private school. And then in our basement was like filled with workstations and all these different, and so monitors and keyboards. And so I'm just rebuilding stuff mm-hmm. myself because I know how to do it. And so didn't even know that was tech. I moved on, fast forward, went off to college where I earned my bachelor's degree in international relations because I actually did so bad in undergrad that I just went to my counselor one day. It was like, hey, with my credits, what can I graduate with? Mm-hmm. And I remember honestly, up until college, I thought I was actually very horrible in like education. Like I did horrible. Excuse me. I was actually surprised I even got into A&T. That was the only school I got into. So thank God for A&T. But I got there. It's my first opportunity at Freedom. I was away from home. By then, my mother was working at a big law firm, and this is 2006. She was making over $200K a year. Back then, that was a lot of money.
That might be close to about half a meal in today's money.
So that changed the, mind you, I'm going from, not to say poor, but lower class, wearing the same clothes, not getting the fresh Jordans, whatever, to my mother first, like when I went down to A&T, dropping me off, going to financial aid, said, how much is it? All right, write a check.
So you pretty much, you went from being Will in Philly to Will in Bel Air.
Listen, and it was amazing to see as a Black woman. And even the people were like, oh, okay. So I didn't refund checks, all that. The first year I was like, what is that? Everything's paid cash. But eventually, I started doing bad. My parents, my mother was like, we're not about to be eating hot dogs and beans and we paying because you killing me, killing our pockets. We paying for you to go to school and you playing.
Yeah.
So they stopped paying for school. So I had to get financial. So then I had to get loans, which I regret.
Yeah. I sure was about to ask you, do you think the fact that you felt like you had an easy street, like.
I took it for granted.
Yeah.
Like
most young kids, because it's. I don't even think to be totally honest, I don't think anybody sits down with teenagers and say, this is what college going to be like. I know, I ain't going to lie. I didn't go to HBCU. But if I did go to one, I definitely would have thought it was going to be like Atlanta A&T and Drumline.
Every day it was like, every morning was like, we had a time last night. Like, it was a party school. So mind you, I'm going from this suburban high school kind of shelter. I'm still partying. Like back then we had like teen clubs. So I was still going out. Yeah.
Do they even have teen clubs?
And that's, I'm like, I feel so bad because we was 14 in the club, like, but our own like kind of teen club.
Yeah,
which
fam
is
in the club.
And oh, and this is crazy too. When my mother dropped me off at A&T, she gave me $10,000 to like last meal. I was supposed to use it. But I was not equipped with the right financial tools to like not start buying True Religion.
Yeah, you can't give a young kid 10 racks.
Henri, when I tell you I blew through that, my mother was like, what?
At least you blew through it. I'm imagining somebody like, man, I might buy me some work, dog. Oh, and get the flipping, man. I'll be funny.
My mother was like, okay, here's some money. I want you to survive, but just enjoy college your first year. Man.
You were just down there. You didn't have a car, did you?
I didn't have a car. You couldn't have a car the first year.
I'm about to say, because I was like, imagine if you would have had a whip.
Listen, I just thank God every day. Everything that happened in my life was supposed to happen. Yeah. So fast forward. So my mother stopped supporting me in that realm. So I can still call her like, hey, Ma, I need some money for this. But it wasn't the big lump. It wasn't all that. I was going into the negative. Ma, can you get me out of the negative? Mm-hmm. She's like, all right. And then I'll be like positive $50. That's it. Because I didn't been in the hole so bad. Definitely learned that. Got my first credit card in college too. But so at the end of the day, I did horrible. I ended up getting financial aid. Grades were so bad. Lost it. My dad, because his side of the family is from North Carolina. One of my cousins was on the board for financial aid. So all I had to do was like appeal it. And she was on the board and they gave it back to me. So I'm like, cool, say less. Like, easy money, nepotism. So I'm back partying, bad grades again, lost it again. And so I'm like, oh my God, like, how am I going to go to school? Mind you, I have a sister that's right behind me. She's at Spelman and she's extremely smart. And so I'm getting to the point where I'm like, oh my God, my sister's going to graduate before me. And I had to face the fact that I was going to take me 5 years to graduate. Mm-hmm. You know, seeing my sister, like going to Spelman and seeing my sister graduate, like that's like really sucked. Like that made me feel horrible. And I really was like, okay, Miranda, you got to get yourself together. Because one thing you're not going to do, Miranda, is leave this school with debt, with nothing to show for it. Mm-hmm. So we're going to buckle down. And so I went home and I did some summer classes. Because you have to, like, this thing with financial aid, your GPA has to be a certain way. Weighted versus, it's just like weird. Once I got the hang of that, I understood like what I had to do. I got some credits that would allow me to like to help my GPA get up so I can get the financial aid credits versus, and did that, went back to school. And then my mom, so I ended up getting a job and I paid for me to go to school. I became an NC resident and I took one class and I paid for it. So I went one semester taking one class. And because I knew that would help me get mm-hmm. things even up so I can get it. So finally, after doing the work, after doing long nights, going to the library, like I'm finally being a student, like studious. Yeah. Dang, it took you that long. Yeah. But it helped me. It helped me understand like perseverance, determination. So all a learning lesson. And so finally got my act together, graduated 5 years. Graduated international relations. I'm like, what am I gonna do with this? So I ended up working at I graduated, went to live in Costa Rica, where I learned Spanish 8 hours a day. Because I had this international relations degree.
So
I'm like,
still,
I need to
Are you still fluent in Spanish?
No. I'm not fluent, but I can speak French. Don't let me get out of this country.
It'll come back.
But I have been in a very high stress situation in Cuba where I could not speak any Spanish. It was so bad. I'll have to tell that story later. But yeah, I couldn't speak Spanish then. But yeah, so I went on, did that, came home, landed my first role at BAE Systems. It was an engineering program. They were funding an internationally funded missile program. And that was still the girl that struggled in high school, undergrad, and now at this big company. I didn't even understand what it really meant, working for BAE, getting a secret clearance, and then working with these type of people. So I was traveling. I was going to Arizona. I was going to the sites. I was going to the missile sites. So I'm traveling across the country internationally, too, because it was internationally funded. So we would have these meetings. And so I'm like, oh, my God, these steering committee meetings. That's like my first taste of STEM. And I was working as like a project coordinator role. But I remained in a STEM IT space, but in project management. So I began to familiarize myself with the jargon because I'm taking notes. I'm taking minutes, taking notes, doing the meetings, things of that nature. And then moving into the junior project manager, like chief of staff, like really being like my director. Yeah. So I had to know what he knew. I had to regurgitate that. Then I recognized, so I worked my way through the federal government and I was like, okay, this thing, cybersecurity, is like big. this is big. And I was in a service delivery division, but they just kept talking about cybersecurity and risk and things. And I'm like, I got it. And thankfully, I was smart to understand, okay, you need to grab this and ride this wave. And so I went to my boss and I told him, like, hey, I'm interested in cybersecurity. And so I would just ask him certain stuff and he would break it down. He would close the door. He was a white guy too. And sometimes that's why I'll talk about this later.
I've seen that on Twitter. Yeah. And I'd be funny with it. I'd be like.
But yeah, so he was amazing boss. Yes, white man, very smart. But he helped me a lot. He closed the door. He was writing on a whiteboard, doing diagrams, teaching me in there. And he'd be like, all right, now let's go do something with it. So then I began to move into the tech space. And then when I had a black woman that was a director and she was in cybersecurity, and she told me, and I told her, hey, her name is Samika McNeil. And I told her, like, hey, so I really want to get inside. I want to start getting this experience. And she was like, okay, I'm gonna do, like, what are you good at? And I was like, I have a background in project management. I'm super efficient. Like, I can great with workflows. Like, she, okay, great. I'm going to give you this. So we had an ATO, ATT process, which is the authority to operate, authority to test. And that's when you bring on a system and you have to ensure that it can be secure in your environment, mm-hmm. in layman terms. And so the process was the signatures were getting, the systems were, or the documents were being expired before the signature and we weren't renewing fast enough. And so I created a process for that. Mm-hmm. And she was like, okay, great. You did amazing at this. Here, I'm going to help you. And I want you to assess this system. And so we did that whole process. And then she just let me do it. And I'm just doing research online. Okay, what's the next steps for RMF? What's the, all these documents. And so after that, it just took off from there. And it was certs. And so mind you, I was working in cybersecurity before I had any certs. Like, I was studying for Security Plus, after I was, mm-hmm. I didn't need a cert. I just knew that was, the thing, and I wanted to move quickly and job hop, so I knew I needed certs, but I didn't get those until, I feel like, a little bit later. I didn't start off with certs or a degree in tech. Yeah. So, yeah, fast forward, I'm here today. I've had different roles, but, yeah, that's a little bit about my story. I have a long story, but that's a short version.
Yeah, I wanted to briefly go back to you in school, because I think you might have been demonstrating something that a lot of students deal with, but they don't know how to overcome it. Or not necessarily overcome it. But do you think your struggles were not because you weren't good at school, because we see now that you're about to be a
doctor.
Do you think it was because you weren't interested in what you were learning?
Yes, and it was a lot of distraction. It was a lot of distraction. I think, too, because I was failing classes, I still didn't, subconsciously, I thought, this is very hard. This is even harder now than what it really is. I can't do this. I'm by myself. And I just, instead of looking at the glass half full, I was like, nah, this is empty glass. Mm-hmm. I can't do nothing. But thankfully, I had somebody, I had my sister behind me,
pushing you, pretty much. Because you don't want to be the sibling that didn't finish.
I'm the oldest. And the middle one graduated before the oldest. So that was embarrassing, yeah. too. So I was like, oh, nah.
That's how my grandma used to do that about my cousins. She was like, all of them went to school, but I'm the only one that finished. I'm like, all of us had different life circumstances.
Yeah.
I like to say a lot of that stuff boils down to so the reason that you're talking about you having fun in school is why I didn't go to Grambling or Southern. I went to LA Tech. There's quarticism mm-hmm. with more white people. I was mm-hmm. like, I'm coming here to graduate. Mm-hmm. What's that little meme with Denzel? I'm going to leave here with something.
That's how I felt too. No, I cannot leave this campus with just debt. Mm-hmm. So that's when, and I think too, that part of my life really helped shape who I am today, because this is, 2010, 2009. We were going through a recession yeah. too. People losing their jobs and all that. And it was tough. And that really shaped me to who I am. I am determined. I am disciplined. I don't even care about the motivation stuff. I'm going to do what I'm saying, what I'm going to do. I'm going to get stuff done. And so back then in school, I was like, okay, we got to get this done. We got to graduate. And so I buckled down. I remember I was in the library all night. I remember I used to be laughing at kids going to the library. What y'all doing? What are you in the library for? Meanwhile, and then eventually I'm in there all night, walking home late at night, 2 a.m, 3 a.m. to my apartment, because I didn't study all night.
Yeah. But I'm glad you said that though, because a lot of times people ask you, hey, but what would you do differently? And you you want to say that? But then it's like, everything that I went through or I did got me to where I am now. So I wouldn't change anything, good or bad. It's just something I got to deal with. But it built character.
Even with the money thing, had I not experienced that in college, imagine getting my first job and how I would have blew through that money.
Yeah. I've said a lot of times. I'm like, hey, a lot of y'all praying and all this other stuff for y'all to get this high paying job, but you can't manage 40,000. How you gonna manage 120, 150? It's gonna be still like you make 40.
Yeah.
And when a lot of people get that into their mind and then be good stewards of what they have, I think other stuff will start opening up for them. That's truly what I believe.
Mm-hmm. You're not ready.
Yeah, it is hard. Like, think about it. I was just talking about the other day, too, one of the sucky things about the system. This is the only place where you could be an 18-year-old and go get a $20,000, $30,000 loan for education. But if you wanted to start a business, you would not be able to get a $30,000 loan.
Deny. You can get a credit card. You can do a lot of things. You can get debt.
Yeah, so I was like, that in itself will show you like a big problem of everything that goes on. Not to mention, and this is, like I said, we like to just be real on the show. The other thing is, since like school costs has been way past inflation.
Oh, yeah.
It's no regulations on what schools charge. So mm-hmm. therefore, all the loan people say, oh, cool, we're going to make a lot of money off this interest. Hey, whatever you want. Like TI, they giving it to you. But like you said, people are not getting a return on investment on that because, of course, they are choosing their own majors, mm-hmm. which you've been talking about. That's your first time looking at STEM.
Mm-hmm.
You were already around STEM, but didn't really know what you was looking at until you came back and looked at it. But for the most part, most women aren't looking to do STEM. One, because it's just exposure, or they think you got to be geeky. They don't know all the different roles or how to get to it. So they're not. They're more, and which I think is by nature, which I think it works, though, more humanities type of things. Counselors, social workers,
mm-hmm.
teachers, things like that.
Ethos.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I think in some women's heart of hearts, if they could do that and live like a really good, what's the word, posh, whatever type of life, like they would do that.
But the thing about it is, like, I said the same thing. So I said, what I'm going to do is I'm going to get a good paying job
mm-hmm.
and then I'm still do philanthropy. Like, I've still sent girls off to prom. I've fed the homeless. Yeah. I've done all, and that touches me. So now I use cybersecurity and education to teach kids, make kids aware. Like, it's still playing on that, but it's like, I still make good money.
You're actually like pushing me to do that.
I want everybody to do it.
I actually do. I definitely want to go back and do it to my hometown. It's like only a couple of us that's probably even in the industry. But I definitely plan to start up a nonprofit just for them.
Henri, when I tell you like the impact that you have, like the way these kids are, like when I'm teaching, these kids are screaming out of excitement. Oh my God, like we just cloned a Twitter page. Oh, they're like, I didn't even know I could. I'm like, it's so much out here for you. It's not, oh, do I have to learn how to code? No. You don't like it's, and that's a part of the reason why there's underrepresentation within cybersecurity is just a lack of knowledge. Some people are just completely unaware of what the cybersecurity industry, what can be provided, what you can do in the industry, and that's unfortunate. It's just lack of awareness. That's a part of it.
Awareness, and I think I remember I noted the thing because I want you to talk about your access thing.
Mm-hmm.
So I do want to talk about that later. It's awareness, but it's also not enough people that are willing to change the guard or get out of old hiring practices, biased ways.
But the thing about it is, though, even with bias, right? So one of the programs that I was working as an ISO for, back to bias and implicit bias, generally, you don't even know you're doing this. But because people are in proximity of you, that's what you hire. That's who you around. Like, it's just in you. Same thing happened with a program I was on. My boss, she changed the color of our organization. She brought me on. She brought me, our whole entire department was black. Mm-hmm. And then she left. Because she got in a position of power and didn't just keep it to herself. Like, she poured back. Because sometimes a lot of people walk through a door and close it.
Yeah.
But nah, we have to walk through the door and then pull somebody else through the door. Yeah. And I think that's the part that kind of troubles me or really beats me up inside is that we have to be a community. And so educating kids, not quote unquote gatekeeping, you don't want to waste your time, but just like really just creating awareness around the cybersecurity industry and the job security our community can have.
Oh yeah. I think that's a big one. And like I say, I was telling you earlier, like I always try to bring one of my friends. Like, I know they always say like your coworkers not your friends, but I've made two probably like lifelong friends from work. And whichever ways I can, one of them, we work together like three companies and he show up for me, like he do good in the interview and he get in. But it's like, Now, how do you take it to the next level? That's why, like, one of these things about this form, about my company form, helping all these people have these testimonials of getting in, like, you're changing people's lives.
Exactly.
And that's, like, a big one. I know sometimes people may look at, oh, you charge. I'm like, the amount of money they get for me giving them this service to change their life, like, one of the last clients, I think, all in all, he probably increased his salary by 160, maybe almost 170,000.
And how much he pay you?
1,000.
That's a heck of a return.
Exactly. So it's like another guy, I think he got like a 30 or 40,000 like raise. So it's, yeah, because if you want me to do it, I got to put systems in place for it. But it's also the way that is more beneficial to me, because initially I went back to grad school to get my master's because I was like, okay, I'm going to be a manager. I'm going to get us in here. Mm-hmm. And I realized even if me being a manager, it's a lot of red tape with trying to do that.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Because that's where we always talk about diversity. But one of the good things, too, about cyber is people with different backgrounds bring different things to the table. Mm-hmm. That a lot of people, if you're certain, used to a certain archetype, you can always get that type of person. That's what you're going to be looking at.
Right.
Which may be cool, but a new person comes in and you may not even be thinking about them, man, this person paying out to be like one of our better hires. Mm-hmm. And because they just have a different way of approaching everything, they're catching stuff that we are like biased at, that we don't look at. I know for me, every time I go to a new place, immediately I'm like, okay, I worked in so many enterprise environments. Let me see. Why don't we see this? Why don't we see this? Why do we see that? But the people that's been there forever, it's like the status quo. Mm-hmm. And so that's what you get when you bring new life in, or you bring new leadership in.
Or diversity, because what I think about when it comes to cybersecurity or my thought process is completely different than a white male or a white woman. Like, just how we think. So you need the different perspectives in the room working against these threats. Like, you can't just have a one type of person doing it. It doesn't even make sense. Like, it's counterproductive.
Yeah, I agree. Like, I don't know when I'm releasing this episode, but like, I've been going through like interview processes. It's been a long interview process, and I did an assessment. But right when I finished the assessment, they were working on probably offering another candidate. So I knew at that time I was candidate B, just because I finished my assessment after them. Mm-hmm. Needless to say, that candidate, I don't know what happened. Maybe they didn't pan out. They accept the offer, so now they want to talk to me. Talked to the recruiter the other day, and it was like, yeah, the new CIO, CISO saw like your results. It was like, no, we have to talk to him. So I was like pushing in the final round. So I was like, if you got the same people there, I may not get that look.
Right.
Or whatever. Right. Because now all this is the other thing, too. I tweeted the other day about like more scenario based assessments are probably a better way of testing versus even just the interview. Sometimes, like, I know one of my big things is interviewing is I know the stuff, but sometimes I may not formulate it. And you may want to hear A, B, C, D, E. But normally when I'm working, my A and B is together at the same time as C and D is. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So sometimes when it comes out, it's not coming out like that. Mm-hmm. And sometimes people can't differentiate. We mostly, everybody like multitask while they're at work. Like, I might be letting this search load up and then I'm going to do this and I'm coming back to this. I'm like, that's like how it processes. But when you can see what I put on paper and that speaks for itself, you're like, okay, let's check this guy out. Mm-hmm. But yeah, that's, sorry for that little soliloquy, but those are the things now that I think about now. If I've been in like 10 years, it's different. We always talk about, oh, how you get in? But now I'm one of the people like, how do you progress? How do we stay in?
Exactly.
That's the hard part. Exactly. I know people that's been doing the same role forever. And they're like, man, I've been in my role 5 years, whatever. Like, why I'm not getting these calls? Like I was thinking about the guy about the resume. I'm like, that's why. Mm-hmm. Your resume, you're not displaying some of your best skills.
Right.
And 9 times out of 10, when I talk to y'all, and I get y'all talking about y'all day-to-day or stuff y'all did, y'all done did some stuff that's not on the resume.
Right.
Like a lot of good stuff. So y'all don't brag on yourself. Y'all don't do a good job of bragging on yourself.
And see, what I did, though, when I got my opportunity, every little thing, like when I got my first opportunity into cybersecurity, every little thing I did, I added to my resume. And I took one thing off that was project manager related. So I started building this cybersecurity type of resume. And I'm like, I'm taking all this stuff out, because when I leave, I want to present all the things I did related to cybersecurity. Forget all that PM stuff. Yeah. I'm going to be cyber. So every little thing I did, I put on my resume.
Yeah. Now, about to ask you, I know we're back into like your first job. You didn't have any certifications, but you decided to go get them, because that first job was the ISO role, right?
No, I had another cyber, like a cyber analyst role before that. Okay. Yeah.
So that's the role you're talking about where you didn't have the.
Yeah. And the only reason why I got it is because I asked a guy, they wanted me to go to another agency because he became a director and he wanted me to come with him. And he was just, and I was like, okay, what do I need? What else do I need? I'm about to go to this, follow with you to this organization. What do I need? He was like, just get some certifications, get this, get that. It's just like good for on paper, but I know you're already equipped to do the job. Because when they see the nepotism, okay, how you get here? Because you got a lot of PM background, but he was like, just do this.
Yeah. The funny thing too is like, now the real, like I tell people, the real gatekeeping is them just not wanting to hire you.
Listen.
Or you can't, like the real gatekeeping is, hey, vendors won't put out no training for none of that stuff unless like your company uses it. So you only can go through your company for mm-hmm. the training. That's it's the tough. Real gatekeeping. Mm-hmm. That people are not aware of. Like it's only certain tools, like we were talking about earlier, you can only access them or get access to them
when you get the job. Because people, like, so for my role, we use CSAM heavily, which is like how where our systems and all the information related to it lives. But the only way you can get that is if you get a government job and you get, and they provide you access to it. That's it. There's no other way to mm-hmm. get experience. So it's tough.
Exactly. Now I know. Back when we did the episode 3 years ago, that's when you was like in your it's so bag.
Right? Yeah, and I think I was I getting my master's into? I think I was.
I think you was. Like I said, it seemed like a lot happening. Yeah. Briefly, I want to briefly touch on that role because maybe somebody's interested in doing that. Can you like tell them what that is? And
information system security officer. I think it can entail a lot of things. I think it's really what your organization, what they lay out the roles and responsibilities because. You can be very policy assessor, vulnerability management type of things, or it's like you dip in different buckets within mm-hmm. the GRC space because you want to like, so for example, when you're bringing a system on and not every ISO will do this, you have to assess the controls. Controls are, I can start laughing because I have to remember that people don't know, you know what this stuff is. So when you think of controls, you think of it as a measure to, you know, prevent, deter, or then you go down the line of the different types of security controls that are put in place to do certain things. And then you assess that based on the level of how the system was categorized. So whether it be high, low, there's different requirements based on that. And so you just go through the and you will reference NIST documentation for that. And honestly, I tell people all the time, like they say, oh, how do you know this? Or what can I study? NIST documents. Like NIST has like how to conduct a risk assessment. NIST has security plans. Like, yeah, system security plans. Like they tell you exactly how it should be. Read the documentation. It's out there. Like that's the NIST documents are like my little Bibles. I need to reference them. Okay. What's the, okay. Privacy controls. Okay. So in that, so just to go back to that. So a lot of times in my last program as an ISO, I did a lot of like control assessing, bringing the systems on. I did some third party vendor assessments, things of that nature, really heavily relied on RMF, FIPS.
And RMF is?
Risk Management Framework.
And FIPS is, I don't even know what FIPS is.
I forgot. Ooh, that's. I know what FIPS is.
And like we just federal or something? I don't know. I'm trying to guess what it is.
Yeah,
FIPS.
It used to be 199. Now it's 200.
I'll look it up.
It's so many acronyms, but.
Federal Information Processing Standards.
Yes. I don't know. Yeah.
Yeah. That's why I knew something with federal because it had an F in it.
Yes.
I don't actually doing it because now I've been trying to.
You trying to get a good upset?
No, I've just been trying to go the way of like when the people come in, like they take something from it.
Yeah.
So that's why I did that. I'm because sometimes I'm cool with. Not asking, but I'm realizing, hey, the people that's watching, they might be wondering what
this is. No, I agree. Yeah, so if I keep naming acronyms, we'll be a long list of things. But I definitely use those as a reference. And I encourage people, no matter what role you want to get into, the federal government really sets a lot of best practices and industry standards. So it's always advantageous to see what the latest version of a document is. And just read through it. Of course, a lot of documentation is very long, but just like something simple like the RMF, like mm-hmm. that's a very straightforward the steps, like you want to understand like what happens, what's the outcome, read on it. And I don't want to ever come off like I'm gatekeeping because the reason why I always tell people like do your research is because these people will lie to you. People will lie to you.
Oh yeah. Slap some stuff on their resume and you'll ask them what it is. I don't know.
Even when you're trying to like, for people who are trying to get into tech, like some people just are not in that space to be given an advice. And I just want people to do their own research. Do your own research. It's so important. Take everything with a grain of salt. What I say, what you say. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what my PhD has really helped me shape, like, arguments and conversations. I don't engage in certain conversations because, okay.
Low vibrational conversations.
Opinions are the lowest form of human knowledge. Because what are you basing that off of? I'll tell you this. When I first started, I worked with a chair, and I was telling him, hey, I want to put this article out about bias in cybersecurity and black people. And I'm like, yeah, because it's biased. We are racially profiled. You cannot write a paper on emotion. He checked it. You got to provide facts.
Yeah.
So where's the statistics? He's black. He was like, I know that, but you got to prove that. So what are the theories associated with that? What is the data saying? And I'm like, oh, so now when I'm posting to it, I tell people, like, this is what this is, but go research it. Do your own research.
Yeah.
Or this is what I reference it to. Because how are you going to argue or give an opinion of something with no basis, no receipts? So
that's funny. That's most people on social media. Most people.
That's how we got to where we are today in the propaganda and people just taking face value for tweets and AI pictures and videos. And I'm just like, is this where we are? Is this where our country is? Like, this is where people just face value tweets.
Deep fakes. Even you got now new security threats. Now, hey, I got some information from Miranda. I know how she talks. I'm going to use AI and I'm going to call the bank and say I'm Miranda.
And so it's so funny. I had a class. One of my master classes, and we were talking about MFA and how banks are introducing when you call, hey, you want to go through and verify your voice so the next time it's convenient, and you just, absolutely not.
That's an old practice.
I'm like, what? And I'm asking the students in my class, and they're like, yeah, I signed up. I'm like, why? Why would you do that? And this goes back to data. So we think about cybersecurity and what we're doing. We're protecting digital assets, but data is so important. Like, companies, organizations, businesses, they want your data. It's so important to protect your data and not give it away for free. I tell people all the time, don't give your cookies up for free. Like, when you're browsing a website and they say, accept all cookies, like, why are y'all doing that?
Yeah. Man, I ain't gonna lie, I'll be doing it because I'm just trying to see what I'm going to.
Yeah,
I can go clear them, though.
Exactly. But it's just like, we are... So sometimes innovation can be used as... Not necessarily surveillance or watching, but for example, your microwave, your washer and dryer, mm-hmm. all these Internet of Things.
Oh, yeah.
Data. And I'm like, y'all, I can't. I can't do it. Yeah. They don't, why do you, is it convenient as you think as you think it is, or maybe there's still data associated with that.
Yeah,
and
for
you,
sure.
And who you are.
And don't let, see, the hard part is now is you got the IoT, like you said. So now these different companies, you have to make sure that they're doing their due diligence and people don't have your information. Like, oh, yeah, every day they wash their clothes on a Tuesday.
So let me start pushing ads. Let me start, you're building a profile of who you are. Alexa, Siri, all these different things. It's just building out, just think about them just building a character, rebuilding you as a character.
Yeah. That, when you were talking about a funny thing, we were talking about the voice activation for banks. There's a show with Courtney B. Vance, some other people. Mm-hmm. It's a pretty good show. It's based off like a true story. It's mm-hmm. like the last big heist.
Mm-hmm.
And it was back in the 80s, I think, mm-hmm. 80s or early 90s. This is when banks still did the voice verification. Mm-hmm. And he got inside job with the people who work with like transfer over stocks or something for companies.
Mm-hmm.
And they didn't have they just learned how to sound like the people.
Wow.
And because humans were verifying this, and they were able to steal the money, but I think somebody read it and they got caught. But mm-hmm. the thing is, that was a horrible practice.
Because
what happened was they were all moving to computers. So mm-hmm. computers were replacing that voice activation mm-hmm. thing. But no, that's horrible. All these different... The sucky part now is like so many things online. Okay, it's no way possible. Nobody can remember all these passwords. So now you go to having a password manager. So now the password manager is saying, okay, cool, we just make a passkey in your biometrics. So now people are really not even remembering those things.
We're just giving up stuff for convenience or for innovation. Okay, fingerprint. Okay, eye scan. Oh, yeah, I got, oh, my God, I'm going to be late for my flight. Oh, I'm going to miss my flight. Let me go through clear. Now your eye scan. Like, yo, what?
Yeah. I know, it's just like, it make our life easier. It's
are
like,
you reading the terms and conditions? Are they selling your data? Or are you going to, 23andMe, they're going bankrupt. What's going on now?
I never believed in that. I never believed in sending my stuff out to somebody to tell me I was related to somebody.
Come on now.
I feel like you can just make something up.
Yeah, yeah. So now that they're going bankrupt, what's going to happen with the data?
That's one of those plans,
too.
People
are swabbed their mouths and sent their DNA in.
Yeah, like how long are they going to have the data on file? And that's funny that you're talking about this now, because this actually makes me want to bring Erin back on the show, because she does data privacy for Google.
Uh-huh.
And that's some of the things we talked about, like data privacy. Because when you think about it, you never think about, hey, how long these people got our data?
Are they selling it? Because remember, they're going bankrupt. So how are they going to pay off their debts?
Listen, I just got a new phone number.
Uh-huh.
And how in the world am I getting hit with spam calls?
Bro, I tell people all the time, if you getting spam, your number is out somewhere.
Yeah, I was like, how is whoever sent me some fake thing? Oh, your DoorDash code. But they're so stupid. First of all, most businesses use that. I think it's like a 5-digit number. It's not a cell phone number. If I had time and I feel like getting into house, I would say a nice try.
Listen, when they write me on Instagram, I'm like, I work in cybersecurity. Please stop playing with me. But you know what? My grandmother was about to be a victim of getting a text message about USPS. She did have a package coming. She did receive a text message. She went all the way up to the post office.
She's smart.
And said, hey, I got a text message. And the lady's, it's not real. And I'm like, oh my God, grandma.
Yeah. My granny too, she called me every time something happens and be fake Microsoft support calling her. She was like, they called me and said this, but I unplugged my computer so they can't do nothing.
Did you see that movie? What's that movie? Is it a
Beekeeper?
Yeah, Beekeeper. Yeah. So I'm actually going to Afrotech after this. I'm going to Houston Monday because I was hired to work for this organization and some of the students are coming with AI pitches and solutions. And one of them is for senior citizens who are one of the most vulnerable people or class of or group of people out there, demographic out there. And they're trying to create a solution for them to spot or be able to fact check or what have you, like drop the link that was maybe sent to their text message or email to see if it's a phishing or what have you. But I think it's so important that and to remind us, like, we do have these vulnerable groups of people that could really be affected by this.
I think this is where, like you said, the AI pitch, like I got Gemini on this phone where Gemini does have access to your text messages. I know it's only going to get smarter. The hard part, I think, would be like what type of grant or provision would provide senior citizens with all type of smartphones with AI. But since they don't really know how this stuff looks, the AI says, hey, already.
Predictive.
Apple and them will say in the text message, this may be spam. Or you get a call, yes. It might be spam. So taking a step further, you know, this may be spam. Or Twitter a fact check when somebody's lying on something. And so maybe AI looks at it and say, hey, USPS would never contact you this manner.
Okay.
They only contact you by these methods. So I think things like that are make for great AI security awareness pitches just for regular use.
I agree. And also, too, I think going back to GRC, which is heavily focused in policy and processes, how does the federal government really just catch up to this wave of AI chat? It's so much data that people are willingly pushing into a system. Like, how do they regulate that, govern that? It's very interesting to see how quickly it's moving to this and how the government is just trying to catch up, setting policies and things of that nature in place.
I don't know. That's why they probably always be so locked down. I mean, you can't really do too much on the federal network.
Yeah, you can't get on ChatGPT. You can't use, Grammarly? You can't do none of that stuff.
Because when you think about it, hey, it is data. And like I said, I only use those things like on my personal thing. But I used to hate in one of my companies that we couldn't use. Like, I use Otter AI for my concerts. Uh-huh. I used to hate I couldn't use Otter AI or something like that. I'm like, bro, I'm in this meeting. I don't care what y'all talking about. Just give me the highlights.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I proposed all that stuff for them. I was like, or I was like, look, why is this a meeting? Let's use Loom.
Mm-hmm.
That's concerned if our data goes through Loom. I was like, I get it.
And then that's when GRC comes in. Like, how are we going to assess the third party? What are their regulations? Like, what privacy or controls they have in place? Or It's very interesting.
Yeah, it definitely is a lot of rabbit holes you can go into, which is, for me, this is really more so for people being negligent. But the people from North Korea, they have been using stolen U.S. identities and been working remote U.S. jobs.
Ooh. Slick.
And they've been working. So how they've been doing it is it's a big collaboration. What they do is they work with somebody stateside that has a laptop for them. They have all these different laptops with VPNs and stuff, acting like they are actually U.S. people. And so they're remoting into them, acting like they're them.
And doing it.
And so the people are working like 5 and 6 jobs at a time. So the work is not good work. And it's always a trend among them. They don't want to get on camera. Mm. They can't do other things. But it's like, if y'all not even doing background checks,
yeah,
it's some standard stuff that they could avoid in this whole thing.
That's crazy.
And so some of the things they told them to do is, like, hey, when you onboard these people, make them read the serial number.
Mm.
But that is like a growing trend of people doing that. Because you already had, in the pandemic era, people interviewing for people and then another person working the job.
Oh, I see. I never knew that.
You didn't know that? Yeah, when I was on leave, I think my second daughter was born, and then I was on leave at the time. My manager at the time at my company was like, we just had to fire somebody because the person who was working for us was not the guy to interview with us.
I did not know that.
Yeah, that's a
that's some why people they took turn CISSB to a business. Off of Proctor, like the online Proctor, go in person. Because they was taking people's exams.
Yeah, they do it all the time. But I hate taking online exams because I got to think myself out, hey, can you be quiet? No, I can't be quiet. Damn. I'm not cheating here, but mm-hmm. I need you to relax. But there are so many different use cases just over privacy. What's happening with our data, like all those social security numbers. Like every time something happening, change healthcare, say 100 million people affected.
Listen, I'm so tired of getting an email about a data breach. I'm so like, what are y'all doing? And what are the cons? What as a consumer, right?
Because I already monitor my credit. I don't want that. Right. I want money.
And I don't want $25 either.
Yes. I want racks.
Okay.
Give everybody affected racks. I bet y'all stop doing that now.
That's what I'm saying.
Because they got in because somebody didn't have MFA on, I think it's like a Linux machine.
Mm-hmm.
And then they start moving through their environment. But the whole funny thing about that whole freaking incident is they paid the money, then the groups that was working with each other, somebody ran off on with the money, so some people didn't ever get the money.
Did they lock it down again?
Be better than like reality TV if you actually like start following this stuff. Yeah, like these. Like, think about it. There's no honor amongst thieves, so why would a thief promise to give you a cut of the money? Mm. It's crazy.
Tell people about, think about too, our critical infrastructure. Remember mm-hmm. that time when there was a ransomware attack on the gas? It was a gas or oil company.
Colonial Pipeline thing. Yeah.
People could not get gas.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a trickle effect. So now people can't deliver food. It's just, it was crazy. And I said, but I want people to think about that on a much larger scale.
Yeah, and we glossed over it when we were talking about the 100 million people affected. Not only was people data out there, there were days and weeks people couldn't even get their prescriptions filled.
Exactly. So I like for people to think more outside of just the spam text messages or the email. Think about an electrical grid in the U.S.
Yeah, we'd be cooked. And it's weak. They know it's weak, and they always attacking it.
Oh, my God. And I think, too, that is the way for war. Because bringing down an electrical grid in the U.S., it would be... And think about that's like for a week, 7 days. Full-on pandemic. People can't... Like, hospital... Like,
I don't even think it got to be 7 days. I honestly think it could be a minute or two.
Mm-hmm. Remember when... What happened with the FAA? Remember planes couldn't take off and land?
Oh, you're talking about...
I'm just saying, like, just think of different things, too.
Yeah, you're thinking about what happened with the Microsoft and CrowdStrike. It was a patch, and some of the companies didn't have, like, up-to-date systems, and they didn't have good IT teams. It's all disaster recovery, your change management mm-hmm. process. Like, also, like, for whatever reason, CrowdStrike was granted a kernel level access that no other platform has, and that happened, like, a lot of different lawsuits, like... It was crazy.
I know. And that's why I tell people, this is the field to get in. It's not going anywhere.
Right.
It's not going anywhere. We still haven't even touched on quantum computing mm-hmm. and the encryption that they think is going to, how it's going to break the encryption.
I think it's going to be broken.
It is. The federal, like, we are actually doing activities that are working to understand what quantum computing is and how we can get in front of it. Because
I think everybody's in on that. I know IBM has, Watson.
Mm-hmm.
And I know Watson beat the best chess player in some
really
whatever I think so
uh-huh.
a while ago, so I'm like, Yeah. I don't know, man. I'm low key. Ain't nobody trying to live in the iRobot times.
Elon, just
that's what I'm about.
I'm me like, either. I'm not.
Because I looked at it too from not out of a cyber perspective. I looked at it a realistic perspective. We covered this last week, I think, Destiny and I did. And we're talking about how the robots aren't going to cost that much. It's going to be like 29 G's. Mm. That's like buying another car.
Mm-hmm.
So I was like, okay, let's do the math. People say, okay, cool. You know what? I don't want to hire people no more. I'm going to hire the robots. So I can hire them I could pay for them in the beginning, and that's going to be much cheaper for me. I don't have to pay them no payroll once after I pay for them.
Same thing. I saw they have a robot that does lashes, robots that do nails. They doing like the bartending.
Yeah, they got them robots at McDonald's.
Yes.
So that's all. I'm one of the few people who are like, I hate grocery shopping. I'm like, fam, y'all raised the prices, and now I'm checking out my own food. I need a discount for checking myself out.
Mm-hmm.
It don't make sense. How am I paying more and I'm checking myself out? And we waiting in lines when y'all could just have cashiers. See, back in the day, it used to be like one or two self-checkouts. Cool.
And then five.
Then you had express lanes and you had regular cashiers. I'm like, go back to that. I like interacting with the people when I check out. I don't want to do this. Forcing me to. If that's the case, get rid of all the self-checkouts and just put all the apps on, like all the apps with the shopping stores we got. And let me check out as I'm shopping.
Yeah. What's Amazon? Is it Amazon?
I think Costco got something like that.
You just in and out. You just charge your... Yeah.
I think Costco got something like that. Like, just do that then.
This goes back to what I said, like, the convenience, innovation, like, what, like, we...
Something always suffers.
Yes, there's a tug and pull there. What do you get?
Like, I know we're getting off the rails here, but this probably, like, such a millennial-based, like,
conversation.
But, like, even if the convenience of Netflix is cool, but think about when you was younger, when it was fun to go to the movies, or you went and got a movie from Blockbuster or Hollywood Video. The time you spent with the family, the popcorn, and all the good stuff, like, that stuff don't really exist no more.
Or kids going outside and playing and not being on their iPads all day.
Yeah. That's like a catch 50-50, because these people out here crazy. They can't drive. You in the house and your kid didn't got hit by a car.
Yeah.
But I also think at a certain age, like, kids shouldn't be outside by themselves.
Yeah. Also, too, there was a time when a lot of us were playing video games as well, but we definitely went outside.
Yeah, we had a good balance. Like, my little girl, she likes it now, but, like, she also likes to go run around and play and stuff, but. Yeah, it was just different. I mean, we was motivated too. I mean, shoot, these little boys and girls are scared to talk to each other.
Yeah.
They'll rather send somebody a DM, hey, I saw you at school yesterday.
No, but my friend's son had like homecoming, and they had the regular homecoming party, like dance and all, and then they had a separate homecoming for like introverts and like, I said, what?
They too accommodating.
Man, listen, you better get out on that dance floor and make some shape.
It's something. Some, I ain't gonna lie, you'll be a wildflower, but some will make you move, some start twerking on you. You'll probably get out there eventually.
Yeah, so it's very interesting, but it's all in technology, the effects of technology.
Yeah, guys, so y'all see how just regular life conversations, like tech affects everybody? It's pretty interesting, and it gets pretty fun. But to get back on to scheduled programming. Now, I know you started making I want to say either it's while you're getting your master's or right after it, but that's when you start making that big push for getting into more policy-based stuff in the cloud, right?
Correct.
What's that been like? And because I know for example, my friend that works at Lockheed, for what he does there, they don't really, everything's on-prem. They're not really fooling with
the cloud. Everything's on-prem?
Yeah, for what he's doing in that specific contract there. Now, he's worked with the cloud in the past, but he hadn't did it in a while just for him. But for you, because I know government got their own spaces specifically hybrid, for the cloud and stuff like that. I would assume, because this was like the biggest player at the beginning, but Google and Microsoft have been gaining on them. But I would assume like more of an AWS thing that you've been working with.
Yeah. Remember, it's all, so I'm going to throw another process or.
That's cool.
FedRAMP. Have you heard of FedRAMP? Mm-hmm. The company will go through a vetting process that deems them secure to implement enterprise-wide, like throughout all agencies. And so if I wanted to use Azure, and most likely it's FedRAMP, I could just look it up. You could easily, it's much easier to implement it because it's already gone through this rigorous vetting process by the federal government. So organizations will put in certain restrictions or measures or controls to get this FedRAMP like, kind of certification because it lets everyone know that you've gone through this rigorous process and it's pretty secure. I feel like it's made life easier because a lot of companies want to go through the FedRAMP process. Yeah. But I was going through I was on a contract where FedRAMP was cool, but they were using a lot of third party organizations that would never do a FedRAMP, go through that. And so they would have SOC 2s, like understanding different frameworks and compliance frameworks to understand what security measures are required, like GDPR, HIPAA, California has one. I think those are all very important too. But as far as a GovTech perspective, a lot of these organizations, unfortunately, have monopolized the industry and they've been gone through the process of FedRAMP. So it's just a matter of, okay, this is FedRAMP. Let me, you can implement it. It's easy. Versus like a brand new, like if we wanted to create our own new cloud, oh my God,
you can't just put that in there.
Yeah.
You got to work on that.
Yeah. So. And then they're like, who are you? Okay, it's low cost and you say you're just as good as Azure or AWS. Like, how do we know? And it's just the competition is so hard to compete with Microsoft and Amazon and Oracle and just.
The funny thing is, though, I've actually been seeing some places move back to on-prem. Because I think they spent less money being on-prem than they did.
Really? Mm-hmm. I thought that cloud was supposed to be cheaper because you can scale. You can, use what you need.
Well, I think some people were probably using too much or they wanted more control of their hardware and their infrastructure. Mm-hmm. And then maybe data centers. But granted, all it is
data centers. I was going to say that. Yeah. But I think there's money and resources behind keeping a data center up. But it goes back to then you get into DR and Hoopla. It's just you want to have stuff readily available.
Speaking of, I know just putting this on game about like her and I guess her investment friends. I think they actually had that going. Like they put in for a data center.
Oh, that's cool. They invested in a data smart. Center.
Yeah.
Ooh, that's smart. Ooh.
Yeah, that's
awesome. Mika, you are very smart, and you and your friend.
She is.
That's a smart move.
Yeah. So. With you doing, I guess I could ask you this, because I have also seen now where people who are trying to get into GRC, because you know the biggest thing about GRC, you getting GRC easy, it ain't technical, it don't take no time to get into GRC.
I won't say it take no time, but
I've seen, from my experience and other people's experience, they are actually moving towards having people with at least some type of technical background to get in. Versus you having no experience because it makes it easier for you to catch on.
Yes. And I will say this. You have to understand. Okay. So let's just say you are just trying to even confirm and assess that a system is compliant. Or let's say a new policy comes out and you have to implement it. So now you have to understand what measures or controls you will use so that you satisfy that in being compliant. But you have to know what's out there. You have to know how it should be configured so that it actually works and you are compliant. So there is a level of technical stuff in there. I do agree. I think that it's definitely helpful. It's not just all things policy. Policy plays a huge part in it, but you have to understand what exists.
Going back to your papers and stuff, right? The why behind why you're doing something.
Agreed.
Like, how are you going to get this buy-in? Hey, we need this control in, and we need to do this and that. Okay, explain to us. You can't just say, it says we need it. But yeah, fill in the blanks so I can understand.
Great point. And then, too, so let's just say, okay, this is a new policy. Hey, we don't have the resources to do it. There's a risk there. You have to. So we have identified a risk. How are we going to mitigate that? Or are we going to use a compensated control? Because, hey, granted, we can't use MFA, so we're going to do X until we can something. But people have to know that there's an alternative. It's called compensating control. Like, you just still have to understand there's a technical aspect there. So I agree.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. And that's the thing too, people are trying to transition. Like I was talking about earlier, you don't have any stories to pull from, or you don't understand something, or we still have to this day, we got people who are smart enough, you know what, I'm going to do my 2-3 months of help desk because I just need to understand. So I need some type of foundation.
I can't do help.
I'm just saying some people they think is they just need something now. Mm-hmm. It's probably paying more than what they was currently doing. Right. And as other people have the liberty of not to do that because in one career field, they already have higher paying transferable skills. Mm-hmm. So I always tell people it depends on that. But
like attorneys, like there's a lot of legal aspects.
Well, yeah.
With
GRC. We work legal all the time.
Yeah. So
when it's incidents and we got to release certain information, just like change healthcare too. Mm-hmm. Some attorneys was working on that. Mm-hmm. Or you working to vendors, those contracts, or mm-hmm. you got an MSS. Yep. We are reading those things.
MOUs, all those. So you just got, there's a lot of agreements.
But the funny thing of you bringing that up, though, is the fact that people, when you think about law, you rarely think about cybersecurity.
Man, I said to myself, I wish I would have got my JD versus my PhD.
You think so?
Yeah, because after you're an attorney, like, you can really, like, the way legal and, like, GRC, like, just are tied in, because all these data breaches that are occurring, like, man, you know how much money I would make being an attorney? Like, selling these cases?
Yeah. I want to know how much I would get from it. That's the real part.
No, you're not, like, getting that. That's the problem. See, the consumer, we're getting, we got to know that it even happened.
That's why I never joined in on those class auction things. I'm like, they not finna give me no bread for that.
$25.
Yeah, nah, no. I'll go sue myself.
Udemy had one. Did you know that?
Uh-uh, I ain't know.
You had a class. Did you use a Udemy course before? See, you could have got your little $12 back.
Udemy, Google Workspace had one.
Everybody got one.
It's a lot.
Like, you get a data breach. Yeah.
You get sued. You get sued.
Right.
Yeah, I don't know. I think we've been telling people, like, this is actually a good topic right here. Mm-hmm. Let me see, matter of fact.
What you looking for? Do I need to pull something?
Well, this guy said, like clockwork, college degree requirements are making their way back to tech job postings. And I said, most of them never stopped being on there.
That's what I said. Who lied? Somebody lied.
Because the thing, you got to think about the grift. I can sell you a $10,000, $15,000 course and say, you need no degree and this and that. And convince you.
Like a boot.
Because I did it. See, a lot of times what happens is, and I've compared the way that the people getting into tech is similar to like MLM approaches.
Mm-hmm.
They'll use their story, but we know that we focus on the majority, not the minority.
I said that. I just put that in my story. I'd be going off. I'll be playing Black Power all day. But I just told them, like, okay, yes, it is true. You don't necessarily need a degree to get into tech. That's true. You can say that because you can say, okay, I've looked at X amount of job postings and it says no degree required, experience, or whatever the case may be. But that's for the majority. We have to be twice as good. So yep.
If you don't have the complexion for the protection.
Look, you see how brown I am. Like, so I tell people, if someone comes to me, hey, I'm thinking about going to do it. Do it. Because also too, although it may be a long experience or whatever, you have projects, you have papers, you can talk to how you were thinking, why you came to this conclusion. Like, you can say, okay, hey, I haven't done that, but in my studies, I've done X and we did this or capstone. You know what I mean? Like, you can still speak to some experience.
As you say that, I catch a lot of flack for talking about WGU in a way that's unfavorable to some people, unfavorable to some people. I say, hey, if you're already in the industry, go get WGU.
Mm-hmm.
It's cheap. Easy to complete.
Mm-hmm.
If you're not, go to a degree program that's going to be more up to date, that's not going to force you to get all these certs, that's going to have legitimate capstones mm-hmm. that may require you even to build stuff that you can talk to.
Exactly.
And resume and stuff uh-huh. like that. And then I get different people telling me all this other stuff. Listen, if you listen to the video, I'm not saying you shouldn't go. I'm just telling you why you may struggle. Not only that, other people are struggling because they're going to get the new degrees that or not yet on job requirements. Like, you don't find really too many job requirements asking for a cybersecurity degree. So it may not be that beneficial. Go get one that you'll see all the time. Oh, must have majored in computer science, information systems, data science, software engineering. Get something that's already on there that people have seen before. Because the stuff that you learn in there, you can learn in your job.
Right, right.
So it's like all those things. And I know what it is, if people spend some money on something, they don't want to feel away. I wouldn't want to feel away if I spent money on going to school. But at the end of the day, it is what it is. And a lot of people don't realize I'm always coming from a place of dealing with actual clients.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not coming from a person that's just an opinion that just want to, you know, make headlines.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I'm always basing off of who I'm talking to, what their experience are.
Yeah.
The data.
Mm-hmm.
And
my whole thing, too, is there's a lot of people that say you don't need a degree in tech with a degree. Excuse me? You are not a product of that. So I never engage in that. Go get a college. If you want to get a college degree, go get it. You want to get, and don't get, I mean, don't get, like, someone called me and they want to do a consultation. They're like, yeah, I'm going to get a humanities degree. You're going to waste your money. Right. Yeah, it's at such and such school. It doesn't matter. The name is just the name of the school and the price that comes with it.
So here is where I tell people, if they don't want to do a degree, they should go get like a lower level just IT job, because at least they can go somewhere and maybe, like I said, this is where a help desk or another type of lower level job comes into play, where they get the job and now that job has tuition reimbursement, all this other stuff.
Yeah.
So they can make school a little bit more affordable on them. Right. So that's the way I try to tell people, say, now you're going through school, you're learning school stuff and you're learning skills.
Right.
So I try to say that for some people, because some people do not have the liberty of doing that. And like I said, I'm a big advocate of bachelor degrees changing to really be similar to master's degree.
I agree. Because my master's degree, it was cybersecurity, all cybersecurity. Like my capstone, we had a simulation and we would wake up and it would be like something occurred. And we were like scrambling, trying to do certain. And we all were like, had different roles and we had to, and I was like, ooh, like this is.
Yeah.
And so I was able to talk about that type of stuff in my interview too. So I think it should be a very, not say aggressive, but just direct type.
No, it should be direct. Like I went back to the bachelor's and I had just out of college just taken British lit. Why am I taking British and English lit again? Why am I taking algebra, math again?
Yeah.
I'm taking these classes that I'm not going to need anymore. Give me, hey, instead of that, give me a class on email etiquette.
Mm-hmm.
How to make a proper email.
Mm-hmm.
How to use my check spelling.
Mm-hmm.
Like stuff Excel, people need to know.
I don't know. Yeah.
Like, now, we do always do like the beginner IT intro course. So you do Excel, you learn Access, okay, you learn Word. But yeah, that's they need to give you the more important things. Hey, how to understand. Look, give me a class on benefits. Understand my benefits.
Yeah. I agree. Because like you just, like first year, it's like you just repeat high school all over again, but at a college level.
And I think that's why people's like, why am I here? Why am I at an 8 o'clock class? Why am I talking about world history? Why do I have to take this?
That's why I wasn't going to class.
I'm telling you, listen,
that's
I know.
That's why I was partying.
Listen. You, I think everybody first year, like my first quarter was bad. My final A was messed up. I had to drop some classes. Mm-hmm. I was scheduling the wrong class. I didn't know about rate my professor.
Yeah.
Like I would go in world history class, go to sleep, turn the recorder on my Motorola Joy and just.
I had my little razor out like trying to,
And just let that recorder. I'm just like, I'm not interested in what Magellan did today.
I will say that one history class that kind of shaped who I am today. And then when I went to A&T, I had an African American history class, and that lady had me like.
Now that's like a good point, because it's interesting. Now, one of my more favorite classes that I liked that wasn't necessarily curriculum based. I mean, it was in my curriculum, but I probably would have took it anyway. Was sociology. We did an exercise, and it was like, "Hey, I want you to write." I forgot what groups of people we picked, but like write these. What are they called? Stereotypes about them. And you found out every group talked about each other. Black people talk about black people. The Native Americans talk about Native American white people. Like you found out that. So it was like, it was funny. Like he was a really good teacher. Like taking those type of classes, sociology and like psychology, which is, I will say, to get into cybersecurity, especially when you want to do like insider threat or something on the blue team, psychology is an underrated major.
100%. And so I didn't realize that until I got into my PhD program, when I had to find theories that were applicable. So even, for example, people who avoid like STD testing, like these avoidant behaviors, right? Same thing that maybe like seem hard or they just don't really. So there's a theory for that, and you can apply these certain type of theories to how people act or things that occur in like cybersecurity.
Yeah.
Like one of my papers is actually, I think that the article I posted about the barrier in African Americans getting into cybersecurity, like there are theories that I did in there that are applicable, like the why. So psychology is so important.
Definitely, because all you're doing is you're trying to think about you and the hacker chess game. Why would they do the things they do? And then you think about like, what type of things would come up in insider threat. Like who's this person related to? That's the other thing with the North Korean things. Those people, or no. This is the thing, too, where I say a lot of the, what I think is going to happen, too, a lot of the companies getting over hiring people to work offshore because it's cheaper. I think a lot of that's finna go to the wayside, because we find out, there's been studies showing that those people sell American data and stuff to their country.
I mean, why wouldn't they?
Yeah, so I think a lot of that stuff is finna come away, because certain people are having their, like, contracts, because I'll get hit up all the time for a SOC lead, SOC manager. Yeah, they say, hey, they only want Americans working in this SOC for this thing. Mm-hmm. I was like, yeah, because the U.S. citizens, yeah. Had all this data.
Yep.
So we see those things happening, and we see like human behavior, like when it comes to phishing. Mm-hmm. Oh, did you know I got this picture of you? Oh, your mother died, or I saw what you did. Hey, all these things, or sometimes they don't even start that extreme. They just act like they know you.
Yeah.
It's like when a guy or a girl is like trying to get something out of you, so they just befriend you long enough so they hook you in. Mm-hmm. And maybe the day your boyfriend or girlfriend broke up with you, and that's when they pounce.
Mm-hmm.
Similar to the people on, they're not necessarily throwing you officially gun. They just acting like they know you. Then eventually, that's when they come in to compromise you. They're just trying to get you to respond.
Exactly.
So they can figure out all the information they need to see. They might act like they're a real vendor.
Yeah. I even get text messages now. Hey, Miranda, are you in?
Yeah.
What the? I'm like, wait a minute, what? And I'm like,
who you got for a vendor?
AT&T
had the big breach.
Yeah. Hey, Miranda, you there? Are you in? Did you come in today?
Yeah. So sometimes they won't say my name. They'll say, oh, Dad, this is so-and-so. Who is this? I'm like, oh, yeah, you got the wrong number. It's like, you just trying to figure out who you're texting.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. So they can just start building up. Yeah.
Next time, I'm going to tell them this Dirk.
It's Donald Trump. They're like, oh, great, perfect. You heard about his attorney? Like, his phones were just hacked.
Who?
Trump's, his attorney, his phone, their home.
Oh, I ain't surprised. Yeah. They said people in Iran was, like, related to allegedly shooting him. There's a lot of stuff.
Really?
That's what I saw. If it's wrong, I'll fact check this after this. So I know you, I put noted on your story because you were talking about access.
Ooh.
I want you to dive into that.
I'm going to pull up my little notes too. And two, if you follow me, _ Miranda.
We'll have all her stuff in the description.
Or mbs.tech. I have linked one of my articles that I published, and I created a framework because I am definitely passionate about people, my people. And I created a framework called Access Now, and it really outlines how organizations can close the gap in hiring African Americans or Blacks within cybersecurity space. And but there's a lot of root cause behind why there's only 9% of Blacks in cybersecurity.
Man, yet we make up 13%, I think, of the country.
Correct.
I think it might be more. I don't think a lot of people are doing a census.
No, they don't. Yeah, I used to work for the Census Bureau too. They're not. But and the reason why I push for this so hard is because I know what it can do for a Black family in America.
Yeah.
The job security, the money. And I think about, so I always ask my students, how much money do you think I made last year or whatever? And they say, no. And I tell them, and then they be like, what? I'm like, yeah. So I say, so what would you do with that type of money? I would fix up the playground. I would buy a house. Mm-hmm. I would buy a car.
That's cute. I fix up the playground.
Yeah, like they were saying, I'll do a rec center. And I'm like, that's exactly it. That's what would happen.
Yeah.
So it's crazy because I grew up in a Black utopia, what I call a Black utopia.
Yeah.
And the area that I grew up in, like D.C., Maryland, I barely saw white people. My doctors, dentists, their parents were lawyers. They worked for the federal government. Everybody was Black and successful for the most part. And so it's just like very interesting because our neighborhoods look nice. Like it's just a trickle down.
I think it's just the effects of what's happened. We can say gentrification, but also just the way that the labor force is now. Stuff went away from inner cities, manufacturing, all that stuff. So then we got more white collar jobs.
Right.
But now in certain states, that's not there. Because in a perfect world, I would have never had to left Shreveport. I could be there because it's a Black city.
Mm-hmm.
Very nice areas where you would see like a lot of Black people who are professionals. In a perfect world, you had that. Out here, I think that's more, I could be wrong, but South Dallas, like the Mansfields, DeSotos, I think that's more like where those people stay at.
Mm-hmm.
But the only con of that is all the work is on this side of town.
Oh, okay.
So you would have to be doing too much unless you was working remote. Mm-hmm. So that's like all the different things because that's such me. That's the thing. Like I've always thought about with the kids. I just need them to get to a district where it's a decent spread, where they're not going through those things to where like you see some Black girls think they are ugly or something,
right? Because
they don't see they look like them, knowing that their bodies are different. So it's like, oh, I'm fat, or I would have never had that. Like I'm a boy, but I know little girls.
Yeah, absolutely, You know, like I used to like when my daughter was growing up, I was like, put that white doll down. Pick up a Black girl. Like, why you keep pick up the Black Barbie? But it's unfortunately that's what they see on TV. That's who may be famous. They don't get to see themselves. And I was like, growing up, my father, he didn't we watching the Cosbys, we was watching Friends. Like we
I got my
Gullah Island, like everything.
You know what's funny? Yeah. I have my kids like most of the, if it's not every morning, we either watching Arthur or we watching the Island.
Yeah, like
so much so to my little girl know the theme song.
I know that's right.
So
yeah, so shout out to millennials. Yeah, so I just but the reason why, and I will say this, I really feel like I was put on this earth to honestly do what I'm doing. It's for me, it's always impact over influence. I don't care about the amount of followers I have, the amount of likes I get. I know I was put on this earth to advance African Americans in this country through cybersecurity. I know that. I because everything that happens in my life aligns with that.
Yeah.
Like everything it does. Like I get the most amazing opportunities. I'm putting the most, I meet the right people.
Yeah.
I know it's like, oh, I'm always getting confirmation of that. So me leaving, and I think I say this too, like legacy is what you're remembered as after your death. And so whenever I go leave this earth, I know I can rest peacefully saying, and people are going to be like, oh yeah, I remember Miranda, Miss Stanfield. Like that's what's important to me.
The new VP.
Yeah, that's important to me. You know what I mean? Yeah. That's my mission. I don't care about nothing else other than advancing and educating my people in cybersecurity. So whatever that looks like, if it's in front of students, if I got to travel, that's what I know I was put on this earth to do. Because, yeah, Miss Stanford, yeah, I'm around my heart. Yeah, I'm working in cyber now. Now I'm...
Yeah. I think, it's funny, I think when you go to Afrotech, a lot of people are going to be stopping you. Like, hey, I saw you on YouTube. Because it happened to me 2 years ago. Like, my channel wasn't even as big as it is now. And like you said, I feel the same way. Like, I've had consoles this week where people are like, yo, man, I've been watching content for, I really rock with you. It's like, you may not be getting, like, the lofty numbers, but you're doing good work out here. And you're right. Like, I met you through this. I met so many people from doing this. And as a kid, I always got trouble for talking. And I tweeted this before. I was like, who would know, like,
perfect.
Years later, I'd be doing something I like to do that's useful for me. It was like, I always been that way. And then ever since when I got in, I always would try to help people get in. So even through all this stuff, I had people, so many messages, and I wish I could do advanced search filter like on LinkedIn, but there's been so many people that said, yo, I watched the channel for 2-3 years. I finally got my first security job.
Oh, wow.
So it's like,
yeah,
I don't really be tripping either, like off of the big numbers stuff, because I can't put a number amount on impact.
Thank you. Thank you.
That's the biggest thing.
Yeah, that's definitely it. I get the same thing. People, oh, I saw your interview on Bees, like LinkedIn invites and DMs, but yeah, it's really about the impact. I don't care about the influence, but honestly though, this is how I know I'm aligned. What's going on in my life, the opportunities that I'm presented have nothing to do with social media. Yeah. Like I might post it because I have the opportunity.
Right.
I don't need marketing. I don't need, a lot of the things that come on my plate are just because of who I am.
Yeah.
Somebody heard about me, but it's not through likes or a subscription or class, whatever. That's good. I created that. But a lot of my big stuff, like my contract work, like me going to Afrosec for free, getting flown out and getting paid.
Yeah, because they sure be trying to be skint with the pay.
They Afrosec didn't fly me out. Another, like, Robert Smith organization did.
Okay.
But yeah.
What I'm saying, though, Afrotech in general, because I'm a little salty. I'm not salty. I'm happy some of the people who's speaking for cybersecurity, but I do feel a way because me and a friend, yeah. Mm. It was going to be me. I don't know if my friend Brene.
Mm-hmm.
I think Courtney.
Oh, Courtney Walker? Or different Courtney?
Yeah, Courtney.
Yeah. I love Courtney.
And she was going to be the host. And we was going to have a cybersecurity talk. And they didn't want it. Because I think at that time, they were looking for famous people. I'm like.
They are. Yeah.
And I was
like, Thanksgiving is good. I'm going to speak at Thanksgiving with Courtney Walker, too. So.
Yeah. I said, next year I'll do more. So I said, I wasn't going to do any traveling until Josh got older.
Mm-hmm.
So I pretty much have put like all down the back burner. But next year. Mm-hmm. I'll probably be doing like more conferences and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Because ideally, if I was able to go to Houston next week or whatever, or even in Thanksgiving, because I want to do, like, people have heard me say this on the pod so much, but I plan to do it. I don't know when it is. I'm going to get the right people around me. We're going to plan it. Like a couple of live shows.
Mm.
I look at my analytics. I know I got people that watch me out there where y'all at, D.C. I got people in Atlanta that watch, of course, people here. I got some people on the West Coast.
Mm-hmm.
So I want to do 3 or 4 things.
Like just try. Yeah,
I went to see Nightcap at the House of Blues here when they was down here. And I did that so I could say, okay, I see what they did. It's like me and my co-host got a good rapport. And then I could bring up, you know, different things for people to do. Like I could say, all right, yeah, I'm going to pick 2 people from the audience, which y'all's experience is. I'm going to do a regular capture the flag. Something.
Oh, I like that.
Whoever wins get $200 or something
you,
like that.
Don't leave it there. They don't want to steal your idea.
Yeah. It's on wax if they steal it.
Yeah. It's, oh. But yeah, I think that's an amazing idea. I just think that, you know, you being authentic in who you are. I've always sent people your way.
Yeah.
I used to be like, I need an affiliate.
No, speaking of that, I actually finally switched to Kajabi, and I have to work out whatever percentages I want to do for the plan. So wherever price they change, it still should be a good amount. Mm-hmm. But I am working on the affiliate things. I finally got it done.
Yeah. No, it's okay. But I was just looking.
I wanted to get it done for people because I was like, hey, like, I appreciate when mm-hmm. people send people my way because you thought about me. You thought enough about me to know that I wasn't going to mess over somebody
right.
who looked to you for guidance.
Mm-hmm. And I think that shows my character too. No, I can't help you there, but he can.
And I think that's why people always walk with me because that ain't really my strong suit. Let me see.
Yeah, I'm a pet. Yeah.
Because I got another friend. Shout out to TR. If I'm busy, whatever. But I was like, listen, if you want your resume to be hidden, I send them to her. Like
yeah.
friends, family, anything. I was like, or if they're an experienced individual, I was like, I say, look, she got her testimonials there.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, me and a couple of friends, we all have got our services and we've been like, everything been boomed out. Mm-hmm. Metro. Like, I send people that way.
Yeah,
so that's why I like
to Courtney too. Yeah. Courtney's really good. But yeah, we're a community. We should all be yeah. helping each other out. I love it. I just think.
I've always imagined having this freaking like company that's a dream team of like us cyber professionals and like a company or something, like whether it's consulting company or whatever it is.
Just a big.
Yeah, like people like that know what they're doing. And we can say, hey, we got between us 50, 60 years of experience. This person specializes in this.
Not,
yeah. This person is this and not like
ooh.
That. Like, I've always thought of that. Because I know friends that like have their own business that kind of been on the country. Right. But I've always thought of some type of superstar. Johnny Cochran.
You just come in.
Cybersecurity type
yeah.
stuff.
Yeah.
And that's always been cool to me. I ain't going to say when we do it. That's what mm-hmm. I'm going to say. I'm going to say mm-hmm. when we do it. I think it'll be like the first. Because I don't think I've seen that.
Like
you know, you have all these
team.
Other things. Mm-hmm. Oh, this guy was working for the NSA at 15. Or this person, like, bringing those type of people in. Because think about it. We got friends that were like top tech companies
mm-hmm.
that are very skillful.
Yeah. Like I got invited to some good parties at Afrotech because they, that girl or that guy within that company.
Yeah. So like.
Some heavy hitters.
All mm-hmm. that stuff was like, just taking like, yeah, this person has worked for Amazon the last 10 years.
Yep.
You go tell somebody that when you're trying to build on a contract. Oh, cool.
Yep.
They got it. Oh, this person is working in the crypto industry. This person's been working in healthcare. This person's been working in government. This person's been working in manufacturing.
Mm-hmm.
All that stuff.
Yeah. I think that's why I was
doing a lot of
conferences.
Because that's what they do with the law firms, right?
Yeah, 100%. Yeah. I think that's why I was doing a lot of conferences because in presenting, because I wanted people to know who I am, like what I know. So that's been actually very advantageous for me. And it's like building my portfolio of who I am. Yeah.
That's the only thing I haven't been able to really do. I was supposed to do my first speaking thing last year and that. I don't want to talk about it, but that kind of got messed up.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't anything I did.
Mm-hmm.
But that's the only thing I'm like, I probably could go find a speaking engagement, but I'd be so busy doing so many different things. I was like, I don't have time to. I was like, I just need a person. They can even get a cut of whatever I get out mm-hmm. of it. I was like, just find me some. Mm-hmm. If you give me a mic, I'm going to talk.
Yeah. Yeah, I think you should definitely do it. I've met great people, cultivated great relationships and opportunities from speaking. Because once you speak and people hear you and they're intrigued and you actually know your stuff, like you're not just some internet guy mm-hmm. on Twitter tweeting about tech. It's all
funny you say that. The other thing that people are running into, they are now, which is smarter than they are, asking the people like they go get these consults from, hey, what do you do? Do you work in tech or is your job helping me get here?
Yeah.
And I was like, I think that's a good question.
Yeah, I'm still in the field.
Yeah, I'm like, I'll tell you what, I was like, it's not on my LinkedIn because I was like, I'm just people mm-hmm. crazy, but
yeah,
I'm like that. You can go verify with these people that you've seen that are big names
mm-hmm.
in the tech space. We've actually worked together. That's always been a thing that's worked out for me. So yeah, I've had people I worked with
mm-hmm.
on the channel.
Mm-hmm.
You see what they do. So
but all you gotta do is have a conversation with someone. You can pry and see what if they really know their stuff or not. So
yeah, you can't BS a BSer.
You can't. You really can't.
Except the people that don't know. Like, I could probably show you. I showed.
They was BS and BSers in COVID during the pandemic.
Yeah. No,
they was
I
getting
had,
the jobs.
When I shot with Kayla Tuesday, I was showing her. This guy had a consult one time. He paid like 10 G's or something for a boot camp out here in Dallas. And that resume was
trash.
Garbage. Now, what's the boy's name? Bubba Dub? How he talk? Trash. That thing was, man, I can't believe he paid that money for that. Because they be charging people like 8, 10K to get 3 certs.
What kind of certs? Like
A plus, Net Plus, Security Plus.
Come on now.
I promise.
Stop it.
Because people have been taught, hey, if I get these certifications, I'm going to get a job.
And I wish people stopped getting so hung up on certifications. Like, being cert heavy with no experience and can pass the test, that's...
I'm more for practical certifications. Practical. So when they come to me, like
EJ, yeah.
I tell them, go get blue team number one. All stuff like that. I was like, get that. I was like, I honestly think one day comes here, you're going to go to being practical.
I think it should be.
Because they weigh more. It weigh more if you can actually do the stuff versus memorizing. That weighs. But I think with Security Plus, that would be tough because it don't cover a specific thing. It's like a multitude of domains. Mm-hmm. So I would like to see how they would try to do that.
I saw A Plus. They do have lab environments where they have to click and plug and stuff and do all that.
I guess they'll make them do the labs again. I don't know. But then I got to think about how much do those labs actually simulate real life. Somebody do for A Plus though, because
yeah, for A Plus they work
hardware help desk stuff.
Yeah.
Now, guys, this has actually just been like, honestly, this is really like how me and Destiny shows go, because they didn't really need an introduction or a long life story. Mm-hmm. They need to be entertained but also educated.
Okay.
I always ask these things on the end because this lets people actually listen to the end. So we already know, like, the funny thing, the running joke on social media is if you call a woman big money, you lost her.
Oh, my God.
But we definitely know she's big money. You can tell. Anybody who's dressed in, like, normal colors and is real subtle, they're always going to have an accent on them, a couple that's gonna let you know they got some money. They just let you know they got money, but they ain't trying to show it from a mile away. That's her right here.
You think so?
I know so.
Okay. I'm glad I have some sort of like quiet luxury to me.
Yeah. Anybody dressed in all black definitely got money.
I received that.
I think so.
Honestly, I will tell you this. December, no. So I had my interview with Bees last fall, and I was not prepared for that. And Bees was like, you know, your interview is doing well. People are writing me. I even saw the number. I was like, wow, I got that many views and it's inspiring. And I'm like, wow, I was not prepared to, you know, I wasn't prepared for that. But what it did help me understand is that I know what I should be doing. And so December, I said, all right, next 2024, I'm going like all gas, no brakes. Mm-hmm. And I kid you not, January, I got a call. We want your program in a DC public school. Did that. It's just like, opportunity after opportunity. I'm speaking here. I've really been disciplined and really worked my butt off. And yeah, it's really shown up today, like in my success. I'm going places for free, people paying for it. It's just crazy. But it's all in me just like saying, okay, I'm going to do this. I'm going to get this done.
And real quick, I actually wanted to bring MBS Tech up really quickly. You named, let me see if I'm going to get it right, if my listening skills was working. You said DC. You said
Detroit, Baltimore.
There you go.
I have one that's like a little bit outside of, I'm getting into a middle school actually this month in a middle school right outside of Baltimore. It's called in Anne Arundel County. But I have these things going. Yeah.
Yeah. Let's talk about it because in case anybody from a school that needs these services is listening, what are you offering?
I offer 1-day workshops for cybersecurity to get students aware. And it's always hands-on and fun. The students love it. But I just allow students to get the opportunity to be exposed to cybersecurity, what the industry looks like, and their opportunities there. It's always engaging. It's always fun. And students are like, oh, can I start working for the FBI? If you want to, you can. There's a job for you everywhere. I tell people all the time, whatever company, organization is out there, there's an element of cybersecurity there. They had to have a cybersecurity division. Mm-hmm. You have the opportunity there. So I do that. I offer that for the kids, my babies. And then I also have things for adults. Like I did a master class at a self-paced. It has labs, like people can speak to, like a doctor.
I wish you would have bought it.
I know. Doing like risk assessments. It's on my page. You can just send a link in the bio or my website. But, and I have
I'll put
a community.
A picture right here.
Yeah, and I have a community as well too. And we do like monthly mentorships. And we do, I just, like we had member of the month. I pay for her CISA exam. We just had three people pass the CISA last month, moving into GRC. So all my stuff, like for adults, is really GRC center. And I will never take away or add anything that is not related to that because GRC is really what I'm good at. But I've adopted the chapter, the Women in Cybersecurity chapter at ANT. I've adopted
that's
them.
That's the WESIS, right? That's how you say WESIS.
Yes.
Right?
Yep. So I adopted them. I spoke there and I'm adopting them. So I'm going to mentor all of them and stay with them until they graduate. And even after that, Delaware State, it's a Boys and Girls Club that I just had a meeting with last week. So that's in the works. It's a lot of things going on. Yeah. So I'm just praying that if I continue to put in the same effort I did this year, next year that I will continue to grow. And they might have to ask me, like, so do you work in that field? And I'm like, no, I don't. But I'm also a professor, though. I'm a professor,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, because I was like, man, at what point is girl going to be so busy enough that she just got to leave her job alone?
Yeah, to allow me to stay relevant in the field teaching, like, I teach at a university. Same university I graduated and got my master's from, I teach now. Mm-hmm. I'm an adjunct professor there. So that I always want to be in an education space teaching cybersecurity. So that allows me to stay relevant from that perspective. So if I'm going to be working, it's going to be from that realm. So, yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So you was talking about, all right, listen, guys, we finna wrap it up. But she was talking about her mom was big money back in the 10s, the 2010s. Big M, what the M stand for? Money.
Miranda.
Money. We trying to see. We pretty sure that from whatever you was making with the B's when it's them with up. Yesterday price ain't today's price.
Oh, yeah. That is long gone.
We trying to see. I got to have a different title than her.
Seriously, like it was like 10,000 for 5 hours of work. And it's just all about like, Miranda, what's your budget? And also too, I had to be really confident in asking for what I believe my value is. I would definitely have imposter syndrome or I'm like, maybe I was charging too much. But no, like this is my price.
Yeah. And they got the money. They need to sell it out.
They got the money. So yeah. When you break that down, the numbers are there. So
I feel it. It's all there. Shout out to Jeezy. Guys, we've got to the end of the pod. Miranda, how do they keep up with you for the listeners? How do they keep up with you?
MBS.tech on Instagram. My website, www.mbs-tech.io as well. I have links in my bio as well where you can email me. We can connect on LinkedIn. But I am excited to connect with more people and continue my journey and my mission of educating African Americans through cybersecurity.
Perfect. And guys, like I always say, let's stay textual. Hope you enjoyed this one. And we out. Peace.